So we have been talking the past week about hierarchy problems, right? And I was telling you how, and we were focusing on the one problem people have been focusing on because that's the one they could solve. And talking about the Higgs hierarchy problem. So this diagram is proportion to y top squared, into pi squared, u squared. And then we talked about Suzy, and then we said, well, if you add the Suzy particles, this is y top squared as well. I've stopped here. You get something that exactly cancels the quadratic divergence, okay? Now, which means that makes you insensitive to whatever UV physics you have. Hello? Now, today, though, we'll discuss another approach. So, as someone of you pointed out last week, well, another way to solve the hierarchy problem is if we actually make the cutoff of the theory small. Okay? So, what happens if we make the cutoff of our theory at the TEV? And this is what we will discuss today. So, that happens when. When lambda UV is a TeV, and for this to happen, we need to bring essentially our quantum gravity cutoff at the TeV instead of M Planck. Okay? And this is exactly what the theory of large extra dimensions does. So the theory of large extra dimensions was inspired by string theory. String theory, if anyone knows, it needs to be mathematically consistent extra dimensions, more than the three spatial dimensions that we see. In fact, it can have up to six or so extra dimensions. So usually you think about them compactified near the Planck scale or the GATT scale. But what Arkani Hamed, Dimopoulos, et al. Did in, I think it was 97, they said, okay, let's make those dimensions large and see what happens. And this is exactly what they did. So let's see how that works. So our signature of the metric it's plus minus minus for any special dimensions a minus, okay? That's the signature we'll be working on if you want to go and check everything and stuff like that, okay? So squared dx mu dx nu minus r squared, okay, plus dr squared. So what we assume here is that we have the usual four dimensions, which means there is an index mu that goes from 0, it takes the value 0, 1, 2, or 3. The full 4 plus n dimensions is denoted by the index m, big M, okay? And the small dimensions are just denoted by Latin characters, okay? Not Greek characters. This is a geometry that has flat extra dimensions, a flat space, unless you have matter, let's say in your Minkowski, okay? And then you have extra dimensions that are just compactified kind of on a sphere, okay? And whose size R goes from, takes values, it goes from zero to R, okay? Where R is the size of the extra dimension. So let's see what happens there. Okay, first of all, in order to understand how this works, we need to see, the most important thing is to see, first of all, what happens to gravity, because gravity is the one force that couples to everything here, okay? So, the action for gravity looks the following way. So this M star is now the new effective M Planck in this theory that we have. And we write the usual way. We have 4 plus N here, x square root of g 4 plus N r, and the curvature. Okay? Now, let's do some dimensional analysis. So this is the action for gravity. Okay, and this is where we start from. The point is that to see how gravity behaves, first of all, we need to reduce this. This is the 4 plus N dimensional action. So we want to see what we experience for gravity when we live in the four dimensions that we know of. So first of all, the first thing to note, this is energy squared, okay? And so noting this, this is the type of action, if we want S to be dimensionless, this is the type of action we need to write. But now we take into account that our metric has this form. So we need to write some S effective in four dimensions, okay? And for that, we integrate over the extra special dimensions that we have. So this becomes M star N plus 2 integral d omega N r to the N 4x square root of the four-dimensional metric, which is this part right here. This is the four-dimensional metric. And then we have the four-dimensional Ricci scalar. And this also happens because there is no curvature in the extra dimension, which means that basically it's equal to this. Okay? So now notice this here, that this we need to call M Planck. Okay? And from this you see that the Planck scale, the new Planck scale in four dimensions, is related to the full extra dimensional scale of quantum gravity by the volume, by a volume factor. So this realization brought forth the following idea. So let's imagine that our standard model particles live on a brain. So they only live in a four-dimensional world, okay? So this is a 4D slice. And all standard model interactions, like anything that, you know, Yukawa's, the Higgs, the gauge interactions, live on this brain. Gravity sees everything. So gravity will see the full, every time you interact gravitationally, the gravitons in principle can come out of the brain and go in the bulk, okay? So the idea here is, so you see now that because gravity goes in the bulk, even if I put this quantum gravity scale at the TeV, because this volume can be very large, much larger than the fundamental scale, you will measure M Planck that's much larger than M star. So what happens in these theories, gravity strength, even though it is as strong as any other interaction. So we know, for example, that the charge of the electron is 0.3, okay? Or that the gauge couplings are of order one. So because gravity sees the entire space while the standard model fields only live on the brain, you see that the Planck scale can be much larger than the fundamental scale of the theory. So there is the illusion that gravity's cutoff is much higher than what it actually is because of this volume factor, okay? So basically extra dimensions dilute gravity. To give the appearance that M Planck, to give this relation basically, that the effective scale of gravity is not much larger than anything else. Yes? Question? Yeah, go ahead.
How do you know that the extra dimensions are flat? And how do you.
You don't. You don't. This is by construction. So there are models, and I will discuss them in the end, that you could have other interesting things that happen when you assume you have curvature in the extra dimensions. But I guess this was the simplest thing that could do. They are called, in string theory, this goes by the large volume compactifications, as they're called. So it depends on what type of the way you decide to make this extra dimension small. Okay? So you don't know a priori. It's an assumption, and that assumption has, as we'll discuss, has specific predictions that that can be tested. Now, you can assume, and there is interesting cases where there is additional curvature, and that leads to a interesting scenario as well. So people have considered, like, all sorts of, I mean, it's an arena, right? So basically, it's playing out of the idea, how do I make, to solve the hierarchy problem, how do I make this lambda UV at the TeV? That's all that people try to do, and this can be done in several different ways. Okay, that's a good question.
Yeah. What is the meaning of n, the number of extra dimensions?
It's the number of extra dimensions. So can't be, I mean, people stop it at 6, basically motivated by string theory. But
like in a string it's theory, a free... it appears to cancel anomalies.
Exactly, so you need it there. That's why people put it up to 6, right? But in principle, if you were agnostic about what string theory does, there is no, I mean, but if you look at papers, usually people stop at 6 for that particular reason, because it was originally inspired by string theory, okay? Other questions? Yeah? Ah, it's the same, okay, good. Excellent question, thank you. So the standard model fields are localized in the brain. Gravity sees everything, so that's why it becomes so weak, okay? That's the main idea behind these ideas. So now let's look at properties of this theory. And the first we need to look at is what can be the size of these extra dimensions, okay? And the first thing we can get it is from this relation, right? We know what the strength of gravity is. And we know that in order to explain the Higgs hierarchy problem, we need to put M star at around the TeV. So, is the size okay? So, taking the relation M Planck squared, M star to the N plus 2. And the volume, assuming they're flat, is just forgetting factors of 2 pi, okay? It's r to the n which gives, and usually people, it's more convenient to write this, the inverse scale, m star times m star over m Planck to the 2 over n. Okay, so now let's do some math. Okay, some algebra, some numerical calculations. So let's take that you only have one extra dimension. It's the simplest assumption you can make, just one. The other two are other in string theory, for example, the other five are too small to care. So let's plug in some numbers. So we want this to be at a TEV. On this scale here is TeV over M Planck. TeV is 1,000 GeV. This is 10 to the 16 where do I have it right? Yeah. Minus 16 2 squared. So this gives you 10 to the 12 GeV times 10 to the minus 32, 10 to minus 20 EV. Okay. First of all, is this a large number or a small number in terms of dimensions? Is this a large, how big is this thing? Is it small compared to a meter? Sorry, this is the inverse size.
It's very big, right?
It's very big compared to a meter, okay? Just to give you an idea, r to the minus 1, the Earth-Sun distance, 10 to the minus 18 EV. So this is like the size of the solar system. Okay? So is this good, bad? Is this possible?
It's terrible.
Why?
Extra dimensions have to be compactified.
Yeah, so what can you be more specific? What happens? Why can we have, what changes if we had one, what is the first thing that changes if we had, let's say, if we were in four spatial dimensions instead of three? What changes? Think about Newton, just Newton. Forget about GR and Einstein, just Newton. What changes when it comes to Newton's force?
The 1 over r squared.
Yes. Yes. So what you get, so we know that the Newton force, if I have two masses, right, m1, m2, this goes like g, basically 1, over m Planck squared, m1, m2, over r squared, where r is the distance. Okay? So if you have in 4 plus n dimensions, the gravity force, the Newton force, will go like 1 over m star to the 2 plus n, m1, m2, r to the 2 plus n. So basically, you change completely what Newton looks like. So we cannot have a large extra dimension that has the size of the solar system, obviously, right? So the question is, how small can we make them? How small do they have to be? So actually, one of the most important tests of theories of large extra dimension, number one test, of, and I will call them here, people call them LEDs, LED theories, is Newton's law. Okay. And so let's do some more math. So now let's plug in, instead of one here, so one is impossible to have because it would give you too much of a large extra dimension. Let's do n equals 2, okay? And still, let's put our cutoff at the TEV. So if you do that, you will see that the r to the minus 1 is roughly 10 to the 12 EV again, times now, the ratio here goes like 2 over 2 is 1. So I have a factor of 10 to minus 16 here from the ratio of m star over m Planck. And this is roughly 10 to the minus 4 EV, okay? Which is roughly a millimeter, okay? And turns out this is barely excluded. So in fact, one of the most amazing things about gravity is that till the mid-90s, people only knew that Newton's law was working down to a centimeter. So you could have two masses a centimeter apart, which is a pretty macroscopic distance, and they hadn't tested that gravity works at those distances, which is pretty amazing, okay? So people have designed, ever since that theory came out, especially the theory of large extra dimensions, people made a lot of experiments with different techniques to understand how Newton's law works. And in fact, right now, we know that gravity, Newton's law, to be more precise, works to order 1 down to roughly, if I remember correctly, something like 20 microns, which is an amazing achievement, okay? So what this does, it tells you that if you have n equals 2, you just need to make your cutoff a bit higher, and then you're okay with data. So n equals 2 is right at the margin of being excluded. Now, if you make n equals 3, now you see that if you go to higher values of n, it becomes easier to satisfy. So then you see that r to the minus 1 is equal to roughly 1 EV, which is also known as a micron, okay? Which is perfectly okay with data. So basically, the main theme that you start seeing is that the higher the number of extra dimensions I add, the easier it is to satisfy my data, the experiments. So, as you guys quickly identified, if I go to distances, R less than the size of the dimension, big R here. I said I should have written here, big R. So if I go to distances smaller than the size of the extra dimension, my theory becomes higher dimension. My gravity becomes higher dimension. Dimensional, okay? And this has quite a few consequences, okay? The most spectacular of which is the following. So now I told you this about a very basic test of Newton that tells you if you have extra dimensions or not.
Oh,
yes.
By the last sentence, if r is less than r.
If I go to distances, if I start, if I take two masses at distances smaller than the size of the extra dimension, basically Newton's law changes and I have this. So basically the theory becomes higher, gravity becomes higher dimensional. So Newton's law changes. That means though that, did you guys, as it has been implied several times in this class, There is another thing that happens when you go to short distances. If you convert this to energy, what do I do? If I make the distance shorter, what do I do to energy?
Increase.
Exactly. So that means that if I go to higher and higher energies, in any process, in scattering processes, it means that I'm starting probing the properties of these extra dimensions. Okay? So now, let's go.
That can propagate in the extra dimensions are gravitons.
Here, yes.
So the only particles that you can lose are
gravitons. But that's still a huge difference, and we're coming to this right now. So so now let's talk about GR now. So I told you Newton's law, which is the simplest test you can do. It's a very precise test. I mean, gravity is an extremely weak force. Okay, so let's talk about black holes, okay? So, you know, if you remember from your GR class, let's write the Schwarzschild metric, okay? And I may be leaving out the factor. I think there's a 2 here. GM, yeah, over R, dt squared. Plus, minus, and then I have 1 minus 2gm over r to minus 1 dr squared minus r squared omega bn. Okay? So this is just the Schwarzschild metric in our three special dimensional world. Okay? So what changes if gravity was able to propagate in more dimensions in this formula? What would you change?
Newton's constant.
And what else?
The R power.
Yes. Yes, you would change both of these things. So basically, this prefactor right here will go to, tells you that this 2gm over r has to go to 1 minus m over m star. This is g Newton here. I should actually be consistent and write this as m Planck squared. M Planck squared. M Planck squared. So this goes, so I still have the mass. That's my charge, always the charge. And then this goes like 2 plus n r to the 1 plus n. Okay? So what does this tell you? It tells you now that the horizon size of a black hole in extra dimensions depends differently on fundamental parameters. Okay? So it means that the horizon size goes like the mass over m star to the 1 over 1 plus n times 1 over m star. Okay? And from this, you see right away a very interesting fact. That if I take a mass, m is of order m star, then the horizon size is of order 1 over m star. Okay? Now, can someone tell me why this is exciting? Basically, considering that mass can be energy. And consider that m star has to be always, keep in mind that this is like a TV.
We can then have black holes in LHC.
Exactly. So if you take particles and collide them at energies of order TeV, you can produce black holes. And the cross-section is just geometric because the cross-section for black hole production goes like pi r horizon squared. And then you find that basically, if the cutoff of the theory was at the TeV, you should get roughly 10 to the 7 black holes at the LHC per year. Okay? And in fact, people, when the LHC first turned on, I don't know if you guys, I think you were too young for that. there was even a lawsuit because people thought, oh my God, we're going to create a black hole. We don't understand how quantum gravity works. It's going to swamp, eat the Earth. So people were spooked, and there was even a funny lawsuit to try to stop the LHC from turning on because they were afraid that this will happen. Now, there is an interesting fact about that. The weak counter-argument is the following. So the LHC is collisions that we make in a lab and we control. But the Earth is bombarded by high-energy rays from the universe all the time. So if that were possible, you would have productions, and some of the collision energies, even though they are rare, are much higher than the energies of the LHC. Okay? So if this were to happen, you would see that you have produced a black hole. It would have already, we wouldn't be around to even have this discussion. Okay? So in fact, the reason that they are not a problem is that these black holes, the moment they are created, because they are so small, their temperature, as always, is 1/(1/) of the black hole. So it means that this size is of order TeV. So these things decay. They are so hot that they decay super fast. So in fact, it's a very spectacular signature if this occurs. So you have the protons coming together, they form the black hole, and the black hole dissolves in hundreds of particles that just light up your detector like a Christmas tree, okay? And it's one of the very important searches at the LHC that people do. Unfortunately, they haven't found anything yet. So in fact, from these searches, people have constrained. They tell you that M star has to be larger than roughly 10 TeV or so. Okay, and this is approximate because it also depends on the number of extra dimensions, blah, 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 blah. Now, this is, I guess, the smoking gun of this theory. Basically, because if your quantum gravity is at a TeV, well, you will produce black holes and you'll be able, in fact, I mean, to tell you the truth, that's the best case scenario for new physics because you have everything. The UV completion of quantum gravity is right there at the collider for you to study, whether it's string theory or something else. If this theory were correct, you will be able to study the fundamental properties of your theory right there in a collider, which is really cool. As you correctly identified before, gravity is the only force that propagates in the extra dimensions, okay? So, of course, this is a very spectacular signature, but there are more signatures. And the question has to do with how gravity escapes the brain. So as you see here, this size of the extra dimension is r, okay? And it's a finite size. So if I were to solve for the eigenmodes of gravitons that I see on the brain, I would see the extra dimensional graviton as particles in a box. So, why are my chalks not writing properly today? Okay. Ugh. I don't know what's that. Extra. Graviton, 5D graviton. Gives rise to Kaluza-Klein modes, as they're called. Of massive 4D gravitons. Gravitons. Plus one massless guy, which is the ordinary guy that we measure. Massless graviton, okay? And these guys look, so if you were to write their wave functions, they would look like sum over the KK modes that look like they have a part that only depends. So X now counts the R4D dimensions. There is a square root of volume here times e to the ik y, and y is a function of only the extra dimensions. So they are plane waves in these extra dimensions because they are flat. If they were not flat, you would have a different shape for this wave function. The splitting, because you have particles, they are like particles in the box. What is the characteristic mass splitting between the eigenmodes? Like if I have if I have, let's say I put photons in a box, plane waves in a box, okay? What is the characteristic energy of the, what is the lowest energy photon that you can have?
1/1.
1/r. So the KK modes are just, the splitting between the KK modes is 1/r, which is, as we did over there, is much, much smaller than M star. So basically, you almost have a continuum, and each one still couples with the gravitational strength, okay? So what you have is a continuum, essentially, of KK modes. So in processes, let's say at the LHC, for example, what you will have, let's say I have quarks coming in, I will produce graviton 1, graviton 2, but then I need to sum over all states. This is standard model particle, this is a standard model particle. So, and that depends on the phase space density of these gravitons. So basically this is how you kind of recover the dependence on M star. Even though each one couples with gravitational strength 1/M Planck, because there's so many of them, you see M star appearing again in your formula. So there is a differential production cross section as a function of the energy here. And respect to the mass, this is roughly, there is a geometric prefactor here, which has to do with surface, which has to do with the solid angle, total solid angle in n minus one dimensions. And then you have the energy, basically, at which the interaction happens. And n is always this little n counts how many extra dimensions I have. Then it goes like m star, the n plus two. Okay, so basically, because you have so many modes, you recover the dependence on M star, and this is how you see that actually gravity still becomes strong at high energies. Okay. Now there are several consequences of this fact, beyond the LHC. Okay, and this is something that you guys will be discussing a lot also in the second part of the lectures by Junwoo. And it has to do with cosmological constraints, okay? As I said, cosmic rays is one spot where we have energy interactions, energy much higher at the than the LHC. Another place where we have high interaction energy is stars, particularly supernovae, right? In supernovae, the energy inside, you reach QCD energy scales. We're talking about multiple MeV of energy scales. So in fact, one of the most important constraints of theories of extra dimensions comes from production of these modes in stars. Another, okay, let me put this up. Put this in the middle. Now, beyond stars, there is another thing that was very hot early on, and that's our universe, okay? So if we want the universe to look how it does today, it tells you that it can never be hot enough to heat up those extra dimensions, otherwise you would escape, you would see a lot of energy escaping. So the fact that we have measured at different times of the energy of the age of the universe, its expansion rate, we know that, so this roughly goes like the temperature, the rate of cooling of the universe, and this is absolute value, goes like the temperature over M Planck, okay? Now, if we had extra dimensions, this rate of cooling would go like T to the N, M star to the N plus 2. So by requiring that this guy needs to be much, this has to be much higher than this, okay? You place a constraint on how hot the universe got early on. Otherwise, it wouldn't be around today the way you know it, because everything, all the energy would have escaped in the bulk. You wouldn't have the galaxies that we see. You wouldn't have the nuclei that we see, okay? So cosmology constrains how hot the universe can get. Yeah, the values don't matter. I mean, basically, it depends on the number of extra dimensions. So now, okay, so for the last 10 minutes of the class before we finish, I would like to discuss the questions that you brought up before. So what happens? So people, this became a very popular. This appeared in 97, and this became very quickly very popular because people realized that they can do a lot of stuff with it. So you can put extra particles in the bulk, you can change the shape. So one of the shapes that became very popular was the following metric. So you have, let's say, one extra dimension now. So this is our 4D world, okay? But there is a prefactor here like that. Does anyone recognize what it is from the more formal people?
Conform.
This is ADS. This is an ADS. This is slice of ADS, okay? So, in these theories, and this is a paper, this is a very famous paper by Randall Sundrum, Lisa Randall, two different people, and Raman Sundrum, that appeared in 99. Okay? So now, whatever you knew here, so now people can follow the same exact procedure. Now you have to be a bit careful because this prefactor enters in what you assume for your metric and measure. So what you find here, so the way, the first version of this, there are two versions of this. So what they said, okay, let's imagine there is a hidden brain. And there is the standard model brain where we live. And basically, this is position at y equals 0. And this is position at y equals r. This k here is basically the curvature of the ADS. And the Planck scale here is set by, this is the m star cubed over k, 1 minus e minus 2k, y naught, r naught, r, okay? So basically, you see here, it's like having, so this m star here, the cutoff of the theory, and this curvature number here are of order, are at high scales. They're not at TV anymore, okay? But there is something interesting that happens. So notice that we live where y is equal to r. So the metric that the standard model sees in this exo, the 4D metric that the standard model sees in the space, has this prefactor, e to the minus 2k r times a flat metric, okay? Basically, whatever metric we see in the flat, if you are Minkowski, you don't have empty space. You have empty space. So, and this is a very important fact. So when you write down the effective, like the action for the visible brain, what you see now is that, every scale, every mass scale in the standard model is multiplied by this prefactor. So for example, if I have the Higgs VEV, this acquires factor V naught, similarly for the Higgs mass. M tilde. So what does this tell you? Well, these values now are at this scale, m star, which I told you is very high. But because of this exponential factor, they appear to be at much lower values. So you get an exponential hierarchy between the scales. So even though the fundamental cutoff of your theory is at, I don't know, gut scale, the Higgs would still appear at the TEV. And this is where ADS-CFT comes in. So the statement about the ADS-CFT, and there are several people in this building that can explain better than I will, is that this five-dimensional theory in the ball corresponds on the brain to a conformal theory. Basically, what it tells you is that you have a strongly coupled sector on the UV brain. So the fact that you have the CFT on the standard model brain means that it's strongly coupled, means that you have compositeness. And this exponential factor tells you how the compositeness scales arise. So, and this is equivalent to theories, to some very old theories, because of this. To theories of Technicolor. Okay? So it means that the Higgs is no longer elementary, nor any of the standard model particles are elementary, okay? But the great thing about the ADS-CFT is because now you have an extra-dimensional description that is weakly coupled, it allows you to do calculations, okay? The other thing that's very different, if you look at that, is that, let me put this up. because it's hiding stuff. Because there is an exponential hierarchy, R in units of the extra of the additional curvature is not very large. So this is completely different than the theories of large extra dimensions in some ways. So your extra dimension here is still relatively small. All you require to get the hierarchy is KR is roughly 30. And that's enough to give you the hierarchy that you observe. Yes?
I'm confused. Why do we put the standard model slice at y equals r? Because if we put it at y equals 0, then we don't get this exponential hierarchy.
No, you don't. So in order, if you want to solve the hierarchy problem, you have to put it there.
I see. So,
so people have tried. Actually, this is a great cue to the next thing. This is what is known as RS1, OK? This is the first version of RS. So people said, OK, why can I not put it in the other brain? So why don't we put it at y equals 0? First of all, in that case, you need another solution for the hierarchy problem because all the cutoffs are high. Okay, you don't have this exponential cutoff, this exponential suppression of the scales. So people did RS2, which is exactly the opposite. You take the standard model and you put it at the y equals 0. And then there is some hidden sector here, which you don't care about, at y equals r. And now, where do I have my formula? Let me raise this up. So you see here, from the value of the effective M Planck, if I take, let's take r now to be infinity. Let's take the extra dimension to be infinite in size. The Planck mass is still the same. So this RS2 has the property, realizes that gravity is localized on the UV bearing. So this is another way to see that if you didn't want to shift the masses there, you would see that gravity becomes exponentially weak as you move in the bulk. Okay, if you sit what people call the IR brain. So people, instead of y equals 0, this is usually the UV brain, this is the IR brain. And they call it IR because the energy scales there are smaller than the UV scale. Okay?
What?
Yeah?
So that happens because we fix M Planck to the
yes.
value and then we deduce what M star.
Yeah. M star and K, yeah. So people actually, in the beginning, they had this thought that somehow this would also solve the cosmological constant problem, but turns out the cosmological constant problem always proves much harder than you think, because they were like, oh, I have this infinite extra dimension, perhaps I can dilute it in the extra dimension. None of that worked. Anyway. And this concludes. Yes, go ahead.
I think that I don't see why this explanation leads to compositeness of the particles.
Yeah, this is through ADS-CFT. So you have to buy that ADS-CFT is correct. Okay? ADS-CFT is never proven, right? It's a conjecture. So that's why that's all. There is no. It's just a conjecture, so. Yes, Claudia has a question, yes.
No, I was wondering.
Yeah.
So as far as I know, there are different ways of implementing standard model fields in this context.
Oh, yes, of course.
People put them
in the bulk.
Yes, I'm not.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know much about it. Can you?
I didn't go on
the points that we should remember about this or
well the main points are this is how the and then you can start playing games. So the main reason that this works is the idea of locality in extra dimensions. So if you have one particle localized on one side, it doesn't want to couple very strongly with a particle that's localized on the opposite side, just by locality. So people actually, the reason that people started putting things in the box, one, so this is how you explain why gravity is so weak, because you're localized in one corner of the extra dimension, and then you don't see gravity that propagates everywhere, okay? So people started putting, so not in theories of large extra dimensions so much, they started playing with smaller extra dimensions, but what happens is you can play with the wave functions of particles. So if a particle is localized here versus further away, they don't couple strongly. So the first thing people did is try to explain the flavor hierarchy problem. That's why people started putting things in the box. Because, well, if I have things localized farther away, you can get exponential suppression of couplings. So I can explain why the Yukawa of the top is so much different than the Yukawa of the electron. So in these theories, for example, here, the top is close to this brain so that it couples strongly to the Higgs, but the electron and the lighter, for example, the up and down quarks are closer to the UV brain, so they're further away. So you get exponential hierarchy between the couplings. Okay, so that's why people started putting things in the bulk. Then you get neutrino masses that are very small. And there's issues with proton decay that we didn't. Proton decay is the one thing that always comes to bite you back. And people started playing these things also to suppress proton decay. So anyway, it became as I said, the LHC, the fact that the LHC has found nothing on these theories puts a big damper on them, but it was a playground for people. I mean, people, you could do so many things with them, okay? With this, I would like to end. And talking about flavor, Claudia over there, she's giving a lecture about flavor on Wednesday. And we didn't have time to go into details. I've always mentioned like the one thing that always comes, like what is the flavor hierarchy? Oh, there are constraints from it. So the flavor structure of the standard model, understanding it, its parameters, and then trying to see what happens to it when you add new degrees of freedom, is an entire field of particle physics. The point is that the standard model, the parameters, you have these 20 parameters, they are still constrained by symmetry. So there is only so much you can do with flavor violation. The moment you add new particles, very quickly the additional number of parameters in your theory goes way up. So then the flavor is actually a precision tool. It's a precision test of our theories and the standard model that goes beyond what the LHC can do. So it's indirect searches for new degrees of freedom and new sources of physics. That's about it. Okay, thank you guys. Okay, yeah, go. Yeah.
Can you tell us roughly what the state of, I guess the game is for string theory phenomenology and trying to connect it to that?
Oh, that's a big... The problem with the string theory, I'll tell you, these games are phenomenologic, so you can only make, the key point is you can only make predictions in theories that have very few parameters, okay? The problem with string theory is that it has too many. Like I told you last time on Friday that I guess you were not here. Huh. That it leads to an entire landscape. Like, oh, yeah, the Oscars. Has everyone seen Everything Everywhere All at Once? Okay, yeah, that's inspired by the multiverse, and which comes naturally in string theory. When string theory was first proposed, people thought, I'm going to find the master equations, everything will unify nicely, quantum gravity, oh, everything will come out with one equation. Guess what? Nope, it just gave you 10 to the 500 vacuum, okay? So in fact, I mean, in some ways, it's one of the most important predictions of string theory. So playing games like that, when you take general paradigms, like the fact that you have extra dimensions of string theory, okay, you can play with that, but the moment you start adding too many parameters, which string theory naturally has, you lose predictivity. So to me, phenomenology of string theories is an oxymoron. It's like you try, but you can never make concrete predictions that are testable. And the nice things about the theory of large exit dimensions, NRS, identify general, very kind of like a spherical Kao approximation of string theory, so that you can make a predictive theory out of it. Otherwise, you couldn't. Okay. Yeah. So that's the problem. You can get inspiration from it, just get the general gist of things, but say that, I mean, if you have 10 to the 500 vacua, I mean, you can have 10 to the 500 different theories. This is what it means.
One more question.
Yeah.
So taking the experimental evidence as it is,
yeah,
the recent LHC run,
yeah,
and all those results,
yeah,
and all of the models that we've discussed so far,
yeah,
I guess roughly where are we? And
the best case scenario was on Friday, which I keep reminding you missed. I'm teasing you again. So it's that if you want complete naturalness for the Higgs, it's not possible. These theories are roughly percentage tuned, basically because you have all these theories that are 10 TeV in order to explain the stuff that we see. I mean, the collision energies at the LHC are multi-TeV. So there is tuning. So the question, what do you do about it? The best case scenario, the one thing that it's a kind of a version of what is called mini-split. That's the simplest thing. People have tried to play games. People have said, oh, I explain most of the hierarchy because my cutoff is at 10 TeV. So it's not at 10 Planck, so I'm doing much better already. And then they add what I call the exercise in extreme model building to explain the extra 1% that they get. Could be. I mean, it's logically possible that we build the next collider and things find out. But, I mean, there is theories, some slight modification of SUSY that is inspired also by the landscape that has much simpler ingredients, looks like probably the best bet, given that we haven't seen anything. Like, it's not just the LHC. As Claudio would describe on Wednesday, flavor, it's an indirect probe, but it's a very powerful probe. So we'll see. It could be that it's such few degrees of freedom, it's hard to see. It could be that it's nothing. But that's the only way to move forward. I mean, I and Jun Wu will talk about more optimistic stuff that hasn't been at level of excluded. But the key point of this is that, yes, did we fail? I don't know if we failed. We gave it our best shot. But that's how we move forward in science. You make theories, you make predictions, and then you test them. What nature does not have to comply with whatever you think. No matter how smart you think you are, no matter how beautiful your theory is, nature does not have to comply. Okay? We're just here stuck on our little Earth, and the only way to ask nature questions is through experiment. That's my main message to you. Experiment is what's always guided us in physics, and it will keep guiding us. Anyway, thank you, guys. Yeah, Amalia has a question.
The your standard model in R is what? That's a dimensionful quantity. What's the natural scale for it?
So it's 30 times. So it's in units of K, which is. So basically what people do is that, so you want K is the exodimensional curvature and you want to be able to calculate things, okay? So they say, oh, okay, M star, in this formula they put M star to be few times K or up to 4 pi times K. And then K can be, I mean, if you look at the papers, they have specific numbers. We're talking about 10 to the 12, 10 to the 13 GeV. And then R, you get the size of R from that dimension. So R is 30 over K. So it's slightly below K.
What R is knowing.
Exactly. Exactly. When you solve the hierarchy problem, places a constraint size of R. Same way that the volume.
Is there a natural scale for R?
No. You just pick it. Because TV needs to come out and you pick it, and then You have to argue how do you stabilize it in that size. Everything. Everything in these things is like picking. You pick the volume so that it explains the right thing you want. You can argue some people because of that argue in some ways. You move your problem to the Higgs, from the Higgs mass to something else. But at some point, that's how the world works. And I mean, as the standard model was, we pick parameters and see what's there. Yes, again.
Yeah. I just feel I need to ask a question.
Okay. By the way, we need to go for food.
I think this is the first time getting this.
Oh, I have the t-shirt?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, guys. Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Mina.